Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. When Stacy Aronson was born, her mother Bree was 16 and barely out of braces. Hastily wed to Stacy's dad and divorced soon after, Bree raised Stacy with his and her parents' loving support. Growing up together in an often role-reversal scenario and mistaken for sisters, Bree would come to say, "I didn't raise Stacy, Stacy raised me." Stacy Aronson joins me this week on Vox Novus to share her story that has been called the extraordinary journey of a mother-daughter duo reminiscent of the Gilmore Girls. Stacy Aronson relishes finding awe in everyday miracles and embracing self-reinvention. Thanks to self-taught graphic design skills and a heaping spoonful of universal magic, in 2011, after 20 years in retail leadership roles, she began designing books for authors. Today, Stacy is an established writer, ghostwriter, editor, book designer, and publishing partner who has been involved in the full or partial production of more than 200 books. She delights in working with authors of multiple genres with her business, The Book Doctor Is In, and as a layout artist for She Writes Press. She lives with her soulmate Dana on Whidbey Island in Washington State with their Maine Coon Kitty and the scads of birds, deer, and squirrels that roam their property. Her website is StacyAronson.com, and she joins me this week to share her heartwarming story and her new book, Raising and Losing My Remarkable Teenage Mother. Please join me in welcoming to Vox Novus Stacy Aronson. Welcome, Stacy.
Hello, Victor. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
And thank you for joining us today and sharing with our listeners your very powerful and wonderful story. So please share with us about your mother's life before you were born.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, she was adopted. My grandparents adopted her very soon after she was born. And they were wonderful people, but my mom always felt disconnected and that she didn't quite belong, even though she knew she was adopted and she knew she was chosen. She had a little bit of a tough childhood. She had a lot of happy times, but she was also bullied a lot in junior high. And things were just a little rough for her. And then when she was 15, she fell in love with my dad, who was 19. And one night of of teen passion, and I was conceived. And so just shy of 16, my mom found herself pregnant and very, very scared, as you can well imagine. This was the in 1968. And of course, my grandparents were not thrilled. This wasn't what they had imagined for their daughter. But at the same time, they said, "What's done is done. We will support you." And they did insist my parents get married. So they got married kind of quickly. And they were divorced within a year, which was understandable. They were both so young. But nonetheless, my grandparents were completely there for me, loved me like their own. And my dad, who was so young, also was a wonderful, committed father. And so I had this wacky and wonderful young mother and this very committed dad and wonderful grandparents. So, you know, things felt rocky for my mom, certainly a lot of years leading up to that. But once she settled into having me, her first biological connection, then we sort of just started rolling along with our own special magic.
And I understand that later in life, she actually found out about her birth mom.
She did. It was something she wanted to find out about all of her life. She was always curious. My grandma was very sensitive about it, so my mom didn't bring it up. But when she was, it was about 1992, I believe, she finally hired someone to help her see if she could get the birth records released from the court system. And eventually she was able to do that. And she did find her. It was not a love story. It wasn't a very exciting and wonderful reunion, unfortunately, because my mom's birth mother never wanted to be found. And so she denied that she was her birth mother a couple of times before she finally relented and confessed that she was. And it took a long time to kind of thaw her out to the idea of having just a phone relationship with my mom. But they did finally have that, an exchange of cards and phone calls over about an 18-year period. I wish it had been happier for my mom and that they'd actually met, but that unfortunately didn't occur.
What are your earliest memories of your mother?
Oh, I have such vivid memories from the time I was very young, even as young as a year old. I remember my first birthday party, my mom laughing and being excited, watching me eat my cake. And I remember when I started talking, which was quite young, around the age of two, my mom always wanted to chat with me and ask me questions. And she was interested in my opinions. And so even though I didn't realize it then, she was teaching me that my voice mattered. And that was really special. And so we were always having conversations and we laughed a lot. And I remember her always playing a lot of great music from the 70s and us singing and dancing around together. And then, of course, there are some humorous stories in there as well from kind of wacky things my mom did when I was little.
And we'll talk about those a little bit later on. I want to get back to that, what you just said about her encouraging you to always share your voice, to speak. How important was that in terms of your development?
Oh, I think it was incomparable. I think so many children grow up, it depends on the generation, of course, but so many children have grown up with, you know, don't speak unless you're spoken to, or you're too young to have an opinion, or this is, you know, the parents' decision, not your decision. And my upbringing wasn't like that at all, not with my mom, my dad, or my grandparents. I was always asked my opinion. I was really never forced to do anything I really didn't want to do, which sounds like I would have been raised to be a real brat and possibly very spoiled. But it wasn't like that at all. I was so respected, and everyone was interested in what I had to say and what I thought about things. And so I grew up with that as just a part of who I was, in a way that I felt respected, but I also believed other people should have that same opportunity and respect. So it truly did shape who I was, because it wasn't just about who I was as a person, but who I felt other people should be allowed to be in my presence as well.
Absolutely. I was blessed with parents who were very open to me sharing my opinions and such growing up in the 1950s, but that was an era when you used to hear the expression from some people that children should be seen and not heard, but I guess you and I were both blessed. And it's so important to encourage our children to express their feelings and share their opinions and value everything they have to say, because this will be formative as they grow.
Absolutely.
Now, your mom's friend told her that you were an old soul when you were very young. Why did she say that?
Well, I think when I came here, I was always, as my mom would say, the wiser, more mature one of the two of us. And now she was 16 when I was born, and you know, it was a really cute thing for her to say. But the truth was, I did feel that way on a level I couldn't explain. I felt like I was supposed to look out for her, but not in a way that was a burden. I felt like I came to not rescue her, I won't use that word, but to look out for her, to be a companion, to be a friend, and really in a soulmate kind of way. And so when her friend Becky was chatting with me, I don't remember the conversation, but I do remember her saying, "Oh, wow, Stacy's such an old soul." And I think there was just something about me, and I don't mean this to sound arrogant in any way, but something that seemed very grounded and sort of having been here a few times before, where I just felt that deep connection with my mom. And it was just such a special connection that I think I got it. I got what our relationship was supposed to be. And I just wasn't one of those crazy wild kids, even though my mom was kind of a wild child herself.
I was also labeled an old soul, having a sense of responsibility and even some knowledge that I shouldn't have had. as a 5 and 6 and 7 year old growing up in the 1950s. Do you have any remembrance of past life by chance?
I don't have any remembrance. I wish I did, but my mom and I did have, or actually my mom had a reading by a gifted intuitive friend of ours where she revealed that my mom and I had been twins in a past life a very long time ago. Now, my mom and I always believed we had been together before, probably many times before. Neither of us had any recollection of it, but my mom told me that when I was quite young. So I was always open and very believing in the whole notion of past lives. And I certainly wholeheartedly believe it now as an adult. But yes, we were told that we had been twins, and it was a very interesting time. It was during medieval times, and twin girls were not a blessing. And so only one of us was let out of a tower at a time. And we used to switch roles and look out for each other. And when we found this out, it just resonated so deeply because we have been exchanging roles as mother and daughter all of our lives. Hmm. I would be the mommy sometimes and she'd be the mom. But even when she was the mom, she was always more the friend. We were always kind of on equal ground. And so it was very telling and very exciting for us to find this out. And we've always said too, I'm sure I was her mother in another life. I'm sure we had a soul contract for that at some point because it felt so natural and even nurturing for me to play the mother role in our relationship. Like I said, never a burden, just always sort of a natural nurturing exchange that we had, and we would swap back and forth. So finding out about that one particular past life, and I'm sure there are many more that we've shared, was really quite a gift for us.
That is wonderful. As I shared in our introduction, when my mom became ill several years ago, I wrote a poem called When the Child Becomes the Parent. May I share that with you?
Oh, I would love for you to share it.
She gave me life and delivered me into this wondrous world. She took my hand and guided me as the mysteries unfurled. She taught me to be loving, and all the time she smiled. Now the child becomes the parent, and the parent the child. She encouraged me to study and learn all that I could. She taught me to be confident while doing what was good. She urged me to have faith when life's challenges beguiled. Now the child becomes the parent, and the parent the child. She taught me to be compassionate, a most important teaching. She taught me loving kindness. Her gift was future reaching, as now she needs these back from me, as lost memories are filed. For the child has become the parent, and the parent the child.
Oh, Victor, that is beautiful.
This is thank you. This is something that manifested for you much, much earlier in life. Tell us about how you became her parent.
Well, like I said just a minute ago, there was something very natural about the exchange. And I honestly believe, Victor, that it's because I played that role in her life before. So on a soul level, there was something natural about looking out for her from sort of a more motherly perspective. And because she was so young, and by her own admission, she said, I was 16 when you were born, but I was more like a 12-year-old in my mind. And so she really was a child raising a child. But I think the fact that we had this dynamic where I had this sort of old soul quality, I did feel like I was supposed to look out for her in a way that wasn't overbearing, I would say, but sweet. She really appreciated it. And at the same time, she totally looked out for me. She was completely responsible for me. She didn't do anything too crazy. I mean, there are some crazy stories in the early 70s, but you know, that was the time. But I think that over the years, we cultivated such a lovely friendship that the moving in and out of being there for each other, looking out for each other, it was just always a part of who we were. And I never resented it. I never felt like, gosh, it'd be nice to have a mom. Why do I always have to be the mom? It wasn't like that at all. When I needed her, she was always there. She was always there to listen, to give me advice, to support me. And I did the same for her. So it was a dynamic that we just sort of shared from the beginning, and it just blossomed as we grew up together.
How did this unconventional upbringing that your mother gave you help you to thrive?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think one of the biggest things that is astonishing to me even now is thinking about her being so young. She grew up in the 1950s, a fairly conventional, structured upbringing. And yet when I came into the world, she took virtually no cues from her own upbringing. She went completely on instinct. She did not believe in any kind of authoritarian parenting. She wanted me to have total freedom to be myself. And she always allowed me to, as she coined it, dance to my own drummer. And so, you know, I had my idiosyncrasies and my little quirks and things that, you know, could have been frustrating to her at times, but she just embraced me as me. She never tried to shape me into someone more like her. I was the very straight-laced, a little more conservative one, very bookish, very into school. And she, you know, was the more unstructured, quirky, and wildflower one. But she never tried to make me into a little mini me of herself. It was always about giving me the freedom to be authentically and unapologetically me. So as you can imagine, when you have that from the time you're born, it is a wonderful way to come up in the world and be among other people and stand in your own authenticity when you make decisions. And I have made several decisions that are a little maybe outside the box. And my mom has always stood by me and supported me. And I should add that my dad also has stood by and supported me, and my grandparents were the same way. So I had a wonderful family unit, not just my mom, in that way. But being able to really walk my own path has always been something that I've treasured. And at first, I didn't even realize that I'd been given that. I just sort of had it. And I think when you grow up with something, you just sort of, oh, this is the way things are. And then as I grew older and more reflective, and certainly after my mom transitioned and I was, you know, writing the book and looking at our lives very, very closely all over again, I realized just what an enormous gift it had been, and really so astonishing for her, so young, to have chosen that route of being a parent and being someone who gave me so much freedom to be myself.
What a blessing that was, wasn't it?
Oh, there's no measure to it, Victor. There's absolutely no measure to it.
Absolutely. What were some of the lessons you learned from your relationship with your mother?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I think my mom was such a genuine person. She was genuinely kind and funny and respectful of people. She always called people by endearments, whether they were strangers or friends. She was very affectionate. And I just naturally followed that example. I think in a lot of ways that was my nature, but it's hard to draw the line between that nature and nurture, because actually both of my parents are very warm and friendly and kind people. And so I had that wonderful example. But you know, my mom too, she struggled with a lot of emotional wounds that she carried around. And unfortunately, on the flip side, I saw how that manifested for her in relationships that didn't work, or and eventually in a cancer that grew in her body. And so as many wonderful things as she gave me as an example, I also learned from her how important it is to not walk around with unhealed emotional wounds, to go through a path of healing and being reflective and thinking about how have certain things in my life helped my soul to grow. And so unfortunately, my mom didn't quite get to that place fully. She had times when she did and times when she didn't. And so that has been a lesson for me as well.
Please tell us a little bit about your relationship with your dad.
Oh, my dad was such a wonderful father. He was the very responsible, structured, practical one. He filled my life with a lot of fun, a lot of educational activities, sports. We played all kinds of strategy games and board games and card games. He was very engaged with me. And, you know, as I said, my parents were divorced before I was a year old. So we had the typical custody agreement. My mom had full custody and my dad had the weekends or every other weekend and certain times during the summer. But he was so much more involved than that. And I will say that, you know, when it was our weekend together, it was always about us. It was never about, oh, I've got other things to do, or I'm going to go on a date and I've got a babysitter for you. Or, and being such a young man and being so dedicated to me, it was very special. So my dad and I were also really great friends. And even though his home and my life with him was more structured than it was with my mom, it just had a very different vibe. It was also very relaxed and fun. And I could always talk to my dad. So we also cultivated a wonderful closeness, and he gave me a lot of stability.
My guest is Stacy Aronson. Her book is called Raising and Losing, My Remarkable Teenage Mother. Stacy, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's available on all the major online retailer sites, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, Amazon, Bookshop, Books A Million. And my author website is Stacy with an EY, Aronson with a double A, .com. So StacyAronson.com. You can get links to the book there. You can purchase a signed copy if you'd like. There are lots of goodies on there about my mom and me, photos, and more about the book and a little bit more about me. So I'd love for people to visit me there if they'd like to.
And we'll be back with more of Stacy after these words on the Own Times Radio Network.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can. But it's just as important to take time for yourself. AARP can help. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Stacy Aronson. She's the author of Raising and Losing, My Remarkable Teenage Mother. Stacy, can you share a couple of humorous stories about your mom?
Oh, sure. One of the really funny stories growing up, when I was in kindergarten, one day my mom said to me, I don't want you to go to school today. Please, please don't go. And I said, what? I have to, because remember, I loved school. So she said, no, you don't. And of course, knowing my mom and her never forcing me to do anything, I thought, well, okay, I guess I don't. But the thing is, I think I do, and I want to go. So we had this back and forth of, you know, no, I want to go. And, but I want you to stay home and play with me. And and I said, I can't stay home and play with you. I have school and I want to go. And she would just deflate in this cute little girl way and say, but I won't have anyone to play with. Oh. And I'd say, well, you're just going to have to find something else to do because I want to go and I don't want to be late. And so this would be not a daily thing, but if my mom wasn't working, she would want me to stay home and play with her. And I would always say no, 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 until finally I felt so bad for her. And this is a glimpse of the role reversal again. And finally I said, okay, but only this one time. And so we had a play day that day where I played hooky from school and she was delighted that I stayed home from school to play with her. So that was one really fun story that happened over and over again.
And that's funny because normally it would be the child who would say, I don't want to go to school today. Can I stay home with you? So it really is a role reversal.
Oh my goodness, Victor. It so was because I really did love school so much. And so people always laugh at that story because it normally is the other way around, just like you said.
Absolutely. So something else that was funny?
Well, my mom was, as I said, she was a very free-spirited mom and, you know, she would never, ever hit me or she wasn't even a person who yelled at me or anything like that. But I had a very strong will and I was very opinionated. And so I might say something like, you're so mean. So she and her best friend concocted this thing, this Mean Mothers Association. Now this was, this was her way of keeping me in line. Victor, I will tell you, she could not have thought of a better way. So how it would go is I would have some sort of attitude or some sort of meltdown and say, you're so mean. And she would say, do I have to call the Mean Mothers Association? And you, so you can find out what a mean mother is really like. And she would hover her hand over the phone and I would wail, no, 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 no. And the reason why it was such a big deal is because what I imagined was that there would be a room full of these like big burly women, like a prison. And the person would pick up the phone and my mom would say, I need you to send a mean mother over here to teach my daughter what a mean mother is. And so they would release one of these really scary women to come to our house. This is what I thought would happen. And so I had this so dreamed up in my mind with this fear of this actually happening that, of course, right away I'd say, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. You're not mean. You're not mean. And so it was actually very funny to her. And she had to really, really keep a straight face throughout my wailing. But years later, when I found out it was all a ruse, I was a little put out by it. But to be honest, it was really quite funny.
In retrospect, it is funny. That's a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing that. That's great.
You're welcome.
You started college in your mid-20s, later than most people do. How did that decision manifest? And why do you call it the best choice you could have made?
Well, when I got out of high school, I'd had kind of a strange senior year where I'd gone through a bit of a depression and I had gone through therapy voluntarily and I just kind of lost my school mojo during that time. And so when my friends were applying to colleges and taking AP classes and things, I really wasn't in that space. And so as much as I had always loved school, in high school, I kind of dropped off from that real, that deep love that I had felt before. I still loved learning, but I wasn't looking at college as really my next step. And it wasn't a tradition in my family to go to a four-year college. Everyone in my family had done a couple years of community college, and that was well and good. And I thought, well, okay, I'll do that. And so that's what I did when I first graduated. But even then, I just wasn't really feeling it. The connection wasn't there for me at the time. It just didn't feel like the right time. I ended up getting a job with Nordstrom. And I loved it so much. It was such a family-oriented company. I just fit in with the ethos so well. And within a couple of years, I'd been promoted into management and I continued to get promoted. And I loved the company so much, I just thought that I was going to continue to grow with them. And I didn't need a college degree to grow with them and do really well. But when I reached the age of 25, I had this major epiphany. I suddenly felt like, gosh, you know, I was a smart kid. People always said, oh, you're so smart. And I kind of skated on that. And that was wonderful. And I loved school. And then now I'm 25 and I'm sort of skating on my childhood intellect still. I haven't really engaged myself academically. And I feel like there are too many things I don't know. things I want to have conversations about, things I'm not wise on. Now, if you wanted to know, you know, how to put together a fabulous outfit, I was your girl. You know, I was working for Nordstrom all those years. I was very, very good at that. And it wasn't that I was stupid by any means or out of touch with the world. I wasn't. But at the same time, I felt like I was ready for the college experience. And what was so wonderful about it, Victor, is once I decided I was ready, I knew that I was going to have a whole different level of dedication. And the other thing that was so special about it is I'd been in leadership roles for several years. And so when I started college, I saw my professors very differently. I had so much respect for them in, you know, what is a leadership role as well, standing in front of a classroom, seeing how many people were disrespectful or, you know, chatty or not paying attention or coming in late. And I thought, oh my gosh, I would never disrespect my professors that way. I know what it's like to be in that position. And so I not only had that feeling of respect, but I also just felt such a feeling of dedication to everything I was learning and the opportunity I had. And because it was my choice, nobody had forced me to go. Nobody said, hey, you know, you're getting a little older. You really should think about school. It was never anybody forcing it on me. It was my choice. And because of that, I was able to fully engage and love it and, you know, and focus on a level that got me straight A's and that got me into the college ultimately I wanted to go to after I went to community college for 4 years. So it was a wonderful experience because it really was my perfect life timing.
Your relationship with your mom was comparable to the relationship portrayed in the television series The Gilmore Girls. What did you and your mom think of that series?
Oh my goodness. We loved that show. And I have watched every episode multiple times. You know, there were just so many parallels. And what actually happened is the show came out in 2000 and I had heard of it, but I didn't know what it was about. And then my mom called one evening and said, okay, I'm at my friend's house. And they said, have you seen Gilmore Girls? It's about you and Stacy. And she said, what? And so she called and told me, and I started watching the show, and she watched it sporadically. She worked nights sometimes at the time, so she didn't get to see all the episodes. But it was just unbelievable, the parallels. I mean, Lorelai had Rory when she was 16, and she raised her as a single parent. She didn't have her dad around, so that was different. There were obviously some differences, but just the dynamic between them, the fact that Rory was, you know, the bookish conservative one like me, and Lorelai was a little more of the wild child like my mom, and they had very much a role reversal in a lot of ways, but such a beautiful friendship. They, you know, watched movies all the time and used movie lines all the time. And that was, you know, my mom's relationship completely. We always did that. So there were lots of parallels that were really sweet. And I mean, that's one of my top favorite shows of all time.
Why is friendship so important in the parent-child relationship?
Well, I think that a lot of people look at parenting as a role where you're supposed to control, you're supposed to shape. And in reality, I believe that the parent role is about bringing the gifts out of this person you brought into the world. What are the gifts? How can your child blossom in their own particular soil? Not in the soil you blossomed in necessarily, not in the way that you go through the world, but the way they're meant to go through the world. And I think when there is friendship and there's open communication and there's no feeling of real judgment about what you're doing, it's so much easier, I think, to walk your authentic path. And so when parents are more authoritarian or they shut their kids down or they try to move them toward a path that they think they should be walking instead of what's authentic for them, it's harder, I believe, to have a friendship. And then it's harder for a child to really step into the space that's authentic for them. And so I really believe that the friendship that my mom and I shared, and even that my dad and I shared, was integral to me being able to be who I was supposed to be and not who they necessarily wanted me to be. So I think also just being able to talk about things you're going through, or, you know, having a sounding board, especially when you're going through the teen years or difficult times, not feeling like you don't have anybody you can open yourself up to because you'll be judged if you do. So I was really fortunate with my mom and my dad to be able to openly talk about things I was going through and be able to work through things without feeling like they were looking down on me for it.
And parents are often teachers to their children. How may children be teachers for their parents?
Well, I think that, you know, like I said, I think that one of the great things about having children is that you have a little teacher who comes into your world. I think children really are teachers. There's so much that we learn from each other. And so I think a parent thinking that they're the only teacher, that they're the ones who have all the answers, not that parents necessarily think that, but in reality, children come here, you know, we've lived many lifetimes, and I know not everybody believes that, but I definitely believe that. And so we bring all kinds of interesting knowledge and experience. We may not remember it exactly, but it's there on a soul level. And so it could be very remarkable what a child comes here with to teach a parent, to bring to a parent. And so I would like to just share really quickly that at some point, I think I was in my 30s, my mom and I had been watching a movie, and the child in the movie had been bullied. And I, up until that point, I never knew my mom had been bullied. And she mentioned, oh gosh, that poor little girl, I was bullied like that. And we had such an open relationship all of our lives. And I just kind of looked at her as if she told me she was a natural redhead or something. And she, you know, she was blonde as blonde could be. And she said, yeah. And I said, but I don't understand how, when I was a little girl, all I ever saw you as was this resplendent, confident, beautiful person with so much energy and life in you. And she said, well, that's because I had you. Mm. After I had you, I felt like I was somebody special. I had a child who was smart and who was conversational, and people would make compliments, you know, to you, and I was your mother. And it made me feel special, and it allowed me to be who I really wanted to be. And so that was a very, very powerful moment for me, because I never realized she felt that way. And she said, you know, what felt like the worst thing happening to me as a teenager turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to me. And that, of course, sits on my heart so beautifully and always will.
Listeners, you have to read this book, because this story that Stacy shares about her relationship with her mom, Bree, is just, it's heart-wrenching. It's happy, and it's laughter, and it's also heart-wrenching, and just so true. And I think every parent and every child can learn from reading this book. Thank you so much for doing this, Stacy. This is just, it just got my heartstrings pulled and got tears in my eyes also. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Victor.
Many listeners right now are in the process of caretaking their elderly and infirmed parents, something that you detail painfully to a certain extent in the latter part of your book. What advice would you offer them?
Well, I will preface this by saying that I did only have 9 final days with my mom. And so I don't mean at all to sound like I know what it's like to care for an ailing parent for months or even years, as many other people do. But I will say that in that period of time, there were some very poignant lessons. And so what I would say is, first of all, to try to be in the moment and to think about why you're having this time with this parent in the particular situation they're in, whether there's memory loss or it's just a physical detriment or whatever is happening. Why do you think your soul is in this space for growth with your parent? If you can think about what that might be about. Also, I would say that, in my situation, there was so much love between us and so much that we really didn't need to say, because we had always been so loving with each other and we'd always talked about everything. But sometimes that period where there's a caregiving situation, it can open up space for conversations that maybe you've never really gotten to have. And maybe the parent feels more open and never did before, or maybe the child feels more open and never did before. So while we didn't necessarily need that, I think for a lot of people that that can be the situation. And also, I will also say that one of the things that was very important for me is I did not want to respond to the situation in the conditional, and I'm sorry, the conditioned way, meaning I find out my mom's coming home with hospice. At first, I thought we'd have a few weeks. I didn't know it would only be 9 days. But nonetheless, I could have just broken down, just been beside myself. I mean, we had always been so close. I could have stayed in that space. But I will tell you, Victor, that I made a decision. And I thought to myself, if I had the choice of how to lose my mom, what would I choose? And now people who are caregiving their parent may very well say, well, I would not choose this. I would not choose to watch my parent decline. I wouldn't want to have to be taking care of them physically and mentally. It's a lot. But at the same time, thinking about what could be the gift in it? Where is the gift in it? Because I really believe that there's some divinity in everything. We don't always see it. But I did have a moment where I asked myself, if this is the time she's choosing to leave, there must be some divinity in it, and it's up to me to find it. And so I did set my sights on being in the space of being with her and seeing what the divinity might be. And I knew I might not fully understand it until she was gone. But those are a few things that I experienced that I would want to share with other people who are losing a parent.
Wisdom from Stacey Aronson. Her book is called Raising and Losing My Remarkable Teenage Mother. We'll be back with more of Stacey after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Stacey Aronson. We're talking about her book, Raising and Losing My Remarkable Teenage Mother. So as we shared before, my mom transitioned January of 2020, and my sister and I had the blessing of being by her side and loving her through the process. You share that you gained otherworldly wisdom from accompanying your mom as she died. Please tell us about that.
Yes, well, I was very fortunate to have this gifted intuitive friend named Susan, who was very involved from afar in the transition time with my mom. And one of the things that I struggled with was, have I done enough for her? Is there something more I should do? Is it too late for her to come back and heal? Now, she had made the decision that she felt that this was her time and she didn't think there was anything else to do, but I still waffled a bit and I didn't want to have any regrets. And so while I was in the space of really wondering, was there more I could do? My dear friend Susan reached out to me, and I will condense this down by saying that she basically had a soul encounter with my mom that morning, where my mom was asleep in Santa Fe with me, but her soul was definitely coming and going as she was transitioning. And she visited Susan, and they had a very deep conversation where my mom shared with her that she was the same. She was thoughtful and had her full faculties, but she was somewhere different. She was slightly elevated on another plane. She was right across the veil. She was thinking in her own voice. She could hear herself without using words. And she felt very expanded. And she actually said, I want to stay if only I could capture this expansiveness and keep its wisdom on your plane, meaning I would stay on Earth if I could have what I have here on Earth. But she expressed that she could spread so much joy where she was across the veil, and that she could feel that she was separating from the flesh, but that nothing had really changed. And having heard several near-death experiences, and I know you had a wonderful interview with Anita Morjani, who is incredible, and you know she's one of the near-death experiences that have really changed my life. You know, I wasn't surprised to hear this, but at the same time, I was surprised that I was privy to this with my mom. And so she basically said that she was working it out, that she was figuring out what her life was going to be like on the other side, and that it was going to be grand. Just you wait and see. And when I was told this, it took all the angst away because I understood, like we mentioned in the last segment, that there was divinity in my mom's timing. Now, for me to lose my mom at age 68 was something I never imagined would happen. And it was, you know, it felt very soon, certainly too soon to me. But this encounter and this understanding of what my mom was experiencing really did change everything for me. And what I realized is my mom and I are never going to be apart. We are soulmates. We have a soul contract. Who knows how many lives we've lived together and how many more we're going to live together. And when she's in the soul state only, and I'm still in human form, we are still going to be connected. That is never going to change. I believed in my heart that she would be right across the veil, like she said, and that I was just going to have to learn how to have a spiritual only relationship instead of a spiritual and human relationship at the same time. And that is exactly what has happened. And so, yes, I have moments where I tear up. And yes, when I was writing the book, it was extremely emotional at times. But I also feel such a presence of my mom in a way that isn't just the way people say, oh, your mom will always be there, or she'll be watching over you like an angel. You kind of hear these platitudes when you lose somebody dear to you. But I can tell you, Victor, that the connection I feel with my mom is visceral. It is beautiful. It is, I feel if I need her, I can call her. I feel like I can hear her voice in my mind. And I do feel like she is in a place where she is able to do things she wanted to do here and couldn't do because she was burdened by those emotional wounds and things she just couldn't get past. And so I do feel a joy for her at where she is. I miss her physically. I miss talking to her and texting with her and laughing with her. I absolutely do. But at the same time, being able to have that experience where I actually had, you know, my mom's voice coming through from another person telling me what was happening, it was otherworldly, and it was life-changing for me.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that with us. I think that's a message that many who have lost family and friends and parents, especially during this COVID period, needed to hear. So thank you for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for asking.
Tell us about your career and why you say finding it by accident is a smart strategy.
Oh, well, you know, I spent 11 years with Nordstrom and I loved it. And then I went to college and I had 6 years in college. And then I ended up running another small boutique retail company for 9 years. And I can tell you that during the last couple years, especially of that particular job, I really felt like I was not on the path I was supposed to be on. And the whispers had been coming. I really felt like the divine was trying to move me toward the right path. And I stayed where I was because it was familiar and comfortable. And all my life, I've been a writer. I've always had this crazy obsession with grammar and language. And so, you know, being a good writer, that's a lovely thing to have, whether you're writing for school or you're writing for a project or you're just writing for yourself. And I wanted to be a writer when I was young, but I some teacher at some point said, oh, it's so hard to make a living that way. And, you know, and I said, well, what about being an editor? And, oh, you don't want to do that. You'll be sitting in a little room in a, you know, in a publisher's office in New York, and, you know, it'll take forever for you to get promoted. And so, unfortunately, I actually listened to this person, which wasn't really necessarily the way I rolled in life. But I thought, oh, well, okay, I don't want that. And so when I was 42, the recession had hit in 2008. And the last 2 years of my job, you know, I really did feel like it wasn't for me anymore. And I ended up having to leave that position. And instead of just being able to walk into another position, there were, you know, hundreds of thousands of unemployed people who were all in the pool of trying to find their next great career move. And so I spent an entire year not being able to get another job. And it was so defeating and deflating. It had never happened to me. I couldn't figure out why it was happening to me until I realized that the universe was telling me, don't keep trying to get another job as a leader or in retail or even with a nonprofit. Stop trying to use all these bankable skills you think you have and that are the only ones you're supposed to use. You have gifts that you came here with that you haven't been able to fully realize yet. And if I let you, and I'm speaking in the voice of the universe, if I let you get any of these jobs you're applying for, you're not going to use these gifts. And so finally what happened, Victor, is I kept coming up brick wall after brick wall, and then an opportunity came my way. Now, this came my way when I shifted my focus and I got a little bit of knowledge about the law of attraction, which I didn't have prior. And I thought, okay, well, it can't hurt. And I said, okay, I want a position, a job, an entrepreneurship, something where I can use these gifts of writing, of editing, and I had graphic design background too. I want to use all of those things. Those are the things that light me up, but I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't even know what to look for. And what happened was an amazing opportunity came my way to design a book cover for an author I knew. And I did it and I loved it. And another opportunity came from that. And another one came from that. And so, as they say, the rest is history, kind of. But I was able to step into all of my gifts I'd been carrying around since I was young and start working in the field of publishing. And wonderfully, I was able to work with authors from manuscript to market, not just in one capacity as an editor, not just one capacity as a designer, but doing all of it. So what I do now with my business, The Book Doctor Is In, is I work with authors one-on-one. I work as a ghostwriter. I work as a developmental editor, a copy editor, all the different layers of editing. I design covers, I design interiors, and I do all the publishing and, you know, all of that good stuff with authors. So I actually get to help them build a book from cover to cover, which is the greatest joy for me because I love absolutely every element of it. And had I gotten any of the jobs I'd applied for during that bleak year, that bleak dark night of the soul, I would have never been able to step into this. And so I would just tell people, if you're hearing whispers about gifts you haven't been using, believe me, the universe sent you here with them so that you could use them. Don't be afraid to step into a space where you're using them. Ask the universe to give you opportunities, and you never know what could happen. That's what happened for me.
What would you like readers to take away from Raising and Losing My Remarkable Teenage Mother?
I would really like people to get a taste of two people who came together on this earth. I chose her, I believe, as my mother, who were able to nurture each other and love each other and have this open, wonderful relationship where I didn't end up being a spoiled child. I didn't end up being a rebel because I had so much freedom. Of course, some of that is the nature of a child and some of it is nurturing. But just to be able to experience what a special bond we had with all of the humor and all of the heartbreak and the being together and the being apart, but also the mystical elements of what we shared. Because I think a lot of people don't realize that there are divine connections in their lives, even with a parent who may seem like a really bad not bad, but like maybe not the most synchronistic connection, which is actually what my mom felt with her own adoptive mother. But there are so many different ways of looking at our lives. And I just really hope that people can maybe look at their own with a new perspective. That's that some of what my mom and I experienced and how I was able to recount it and share it with other people will help other people kind of view their own life and their own path from a new perspective. And so that's certainly part of it. And I just hope too that people get to fall in love with my mom. I was in love with her. I think she was a remarkable woman, even though she had some rough patches. The fact that she raised me the way that she did with such open-hearted acceptance and freedom and unconditional love, I think is something that anybody can take into their heart and hopefully walk forward with in their own lives.
Awesome. Stacey Aronson, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Oh, thank you. My website is stacyaronson.com. That's Stacy with an EY and Aronson with a double A. And the book is available on all the main retailers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, bookshop.com, IndieBound. And it comes out June 14th, which would have been my mom's 69th birthday. So yeah, I'd love for you to experience it and experience more about us with different parts of the website where I have photos and other goodies about us.
Stacey, thank you so much for sharing this compelling and funny at times and visceral and certainly moving story.
Thank you so much for having me, Victor. It's been a pleasure and an honor to be with you today.
And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the voice, Furman. Have a wonderful week.